Sam, keeping it true, watching old movies so you don't have to. With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see where the movies truly awful, or did they change history? Good evening and welcome back to the Benefit of Hindsight podcast, the movie podcast in which a father and son talk about movies that they watched together long ago. We give each movie a memory score and then re-watch the movie to see whether or not the movie is better or worse than we remember. And then we score the movie again. With me, as ever, is my son Sam. Good evening, Sam.
Good evening, Dad. How are you doing?
As I'm sure you can tell, I have a bit of a cold.
Yeah.
So I sound a bit gruff.
Yeah, cool crap.
one for the female listeners out there. I've ruined it. So how's your week been? All good?
Yeah, not too bad.
Any anecdotes to share with our listeners this week?
I don't have an anecdote, but I do have something I wanted to share.
Let's hear it.
And I could have told you this regardless, but I thought it might be interesting for the podcast.
All right.
So I think I read somewhere that... originally in Phantom Menace, Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon's names were going to be switched. So Obi-Wan, as in Ewan McGregor, was going to be Qui-Gon Jinn. And that was the original pitch, because it meant that later on in A New Hope, when Ben Kenobi says, Obi-Wan, that's a name I haven't heard in a long time, it would be because that was his master's original name.
Oh, I did not know
that.
Don't
know how true it is.
I did not.
I thought it was interesting.
That is interesting. I didn't know that. So just to unpick that a bit, was it going to be that Obi-Wan Kenobi was Qui-Gon's name?
Yeah.
And then how did it end up with, did he take it after his death or something? Or
I don't know if it was that case or just he took it to disguise himself later on after the whole sort of clone thing. But if you think about it, it doesn't really make too much sense, because why would they have known that in 1977 that was going to happen in 1999?
That's very true. It's like a lot of things in The Phantom Menace that don't make sense.
Yeah.
But we've done that episode. You can go back and listen to it. It was the first one we ever did.
That's a bit of a plug there.
Bit of a shameless plug if you want to go back and listen to the first ever episode, episode one. That would be The Phantom Menace. Got a great question this week from Robert in Grove City, which is, as far as I can make out, in Ohio in the United States of America.
Wow.
And he emailed in response to our Monster House episode and largely agreed with everything that we said. But then asked,
oh, wow, really?
He then asked the question, what's a movie that was made for children that no child should ever watch?
All right. I try and remember the full name of this movie, which is ironic. I think it's either called Nine or Number Nine. Because that's very clearly, it looks like a kid's film. I was very excited for that film, and it was terrifying.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that.
I do remember that. We'll have to add that to our list. We definitely watched it.
I don't know if we saw it at the cinema.
Okay, maybe we didn't, but I know we've definitely seen it. I do remember that film. Yeah, it's genuinely terrifying, dark, isn't it?
I'd like to watch it again, actually, yeah.
Yeah, now you mentioned it, I'd like to watch that again as well. I thought it was a really good question. I've referenced this before. I think the original Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is definitely one.
Ah, yeah.
And then from my youth, there's Watership Down, which is about the rabbit, genuinely terrifying. And then I think the other one I thought of was Grease, which I don't know if it was made for kids, but the musical Grease from 1978, it was probably well before your time. You certainly haven't seen it, but it's got some very dodgy morals in it. And have you seen Grease?
I think
Grease
I have
before?
Seen it, actually.
And everybody,
yeah, I watched it in drama in school.
And everybody in that American high school is about 37 years old.
Yeah.
Which is weird. But there you go. So that was a really good question. Monster House definitely is a film that should never be watched by kids, ostensibly a kids film.
Yeah.
So number nine, and I'm going to stick with Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, or maybe Cloverfield, because that was made for
kids. I was just about to say that.
That was made for kids, right?
I'm pretty sure it was.
Pretty sure it's a kids' film. I'm pretty sure, you know, you could buy the toys and there was a video game.
There actually was a toy.
Was there actually a Cloverfield toy?
Yeah, it goes for quite a lot on eBay now, actually.
Well, I'll get you one for Christmas. Bring back all those.
You don't have to.
All those fluffy memories of the first time you saw that movie.
You can get me a Godzilla.
Okay, I'll get you a Godzilla toy. Let's do that instead. Thanks very much for your question, Robert in Ohio. I think we've covered that one pretty quickly.
Unless you can think of anything else.
That's all I can think of.
That's all I've got. I would say I might also say all of the Star Wars movies. Just because.
Okay.
So the first Star Wars movie, when it came out way back 1,000 years ago in 1977, was truly marketed towards kids with cards and toys and everything else, which is the first heavily marketed movie. So as a kid, you sort of run off to go and watch it. And I was only 6 or 7 when it came out. And it was tremendously dull. As a sort of older person, you can see that it isn't tremendously dull, but it definitely was the first time I watched it. There you go.
Yeah, so I was actually thinking the similar thing the other day, you know.
Which was?
I was watching someone who'd on YouTube who'd watched... he was watching all of the Star Wars films for the first time. I thought it's kind of difficult to sit and just watch A New Hope unless you actually know what it's about.
Right, I agree. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and you imagine it watching it in... We're getting off topic here. Imagine watching it in 1977 outside of the context of everything. It's quite a lot of effort required to sort of get into it, but there you go. But I am going to stick with Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, which I absolutely love. It's a great movie. But there you go. All right, thanks, Robert, from Ohio, with your question. Always nice to get a question from the United States of the Americas. So thank you very much for that. You can keep your questions coming at the Benefit of Hindsight podcast at gmail.com. Bit of a mouthful, but that's where you can get us with your questions or anything you want to say to us about the movies that we've watched. This week's movie was, of course, the 2008 classic Iron Man, which we have both been away and watched. I think I gave this a higher score than you, right?
You did, yeah.
How interesting. So you gave it what out of 10?
I gave it a 5 out of 10, put it perfectly in the middle.
And I gave it a 6 out of 10. Ruinous question. Has your score changed, do you think?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I think I mentioned in the last episode that 5 was the score I definitely originally gave it, but with watching it countless times since, yeah, of course it has.
Okay, interested to find out.
It's a 2.
It's a 1. It's a big fat donut. It's got nothing. Yeah. I have a very quick Iron Man question for you before we begin.
Okay.
Why does Pepper Potts have such a silly name?
Because it's fun, but also I think the original thing with Stan Lee and whoever wrote them originally was that he always gave them the same initials so that he could remember them. So you've got your Peter Parkers, your Bruce Banners, things like that.
Wow.
But because it's fun.
I didn't notice that Bruce Banner, Peter Parker... Tony Stark. Oh, wait, hang on.
Steve Rock, no.
We've ruined it.
Thor?
I was watching it, and I was watching the movie, and I just thought, there has to be an explanation why she's called Pepper Potts. Maybe her name actually isn't Pepper Potts. It's something Potts.
Paprika.
And it's kind of a nickname. But no, apparently her name was Pepper Potts.
Yeah.
If your surname is Potts, would you... call one of your children Pepper?
No, probably not.
I'm always reminded of the Dumpty family. They have a child. It's a bit egg-shaped. And they look at it and they think, what should we call it? Oh, I know. Humpty.
Isn't it true that the original Humpty Dumpty doesn't say that he's an egg at all?
Yeah, I don't know where that comes from, honestly.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
Anyway, that was my first... My first big question on the Iron Man movie is, why does Pepper Potts have a silly name? As it turns out, there's an actual answer to that question, which I did not.
I don't know if that's the real one, but it could be.
I'll accept it. There you go. Right, thanks very much for listening. That's Iron Man all done. So my real first question then about this is that this is really... the movie that started the next 10, 12, 15, however many years it was, of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, that sort of started it properly.
Yeah.
Do you think when they started 2008 Iron Man, they had any idea where it was really going, or is it all made up on the way?
I feel like even halfway through, they had no idea what they were doing. But no, I feel like originally there was always plans to do maybe a sequel or two to this. But I don't know if they ever expected an entire universe. I think there's a line in Endgame, actually, by Tony Stark, where he says, "Who would have ever thought that this would have happened," sort of thing, a whole universe. And I think that's probably less of a line of dialogue from the character and more just written by people who actually didn't believe it. And I know I've immediately jumped to a different film there, but I think it was never always, I don't know, would you expect it to be that big at the time? You could argue Spider-Man, the Spider-Man trilogy could have started something like that, or Fantastic Four. So I don't think it would have been the plan.
Yeah, it is interesting that there had been other superhero movies prior to this from within that cinematic universe, and they hadn't been that successful. But then at the end of the movie, you get that kind of post-credit scene with Nick Fury, and he says, "I'm here to talk to you about the Avengers project." And you just think, part of me thinks, wow, that's genius. And then the other part of me just thinks, they sort of just pop that in there in the vain hope it would go somewhere.
Yeah, it does feel a bit like foresight in a way, because that's obviously where it's going to lead to eventually, but they've dropped it in immediately. So they could have teased something else, like the next villain or something like that. Or, I mean, Captain America's shield was already in the movie anyway, so they could have, in the background. So it could have been a tease like that rather than just the biggest one.
Are there any other actors aside from Samuel L. Jackson that exist in the Star Wars universe and the Marvel universe?
Oh, possibly. Can't quite think off the top of my head.
I can't think of one off the top of my head either. Is Ewan McGregor in any of them anywhere?
I don't think so at the moment, no. I think he ended up in a DC film, but not yet.
There you go. Samuel L. Jackson. Crossing the bridge between Marvel and Star Wars.
There's got to be someone else.
It has to be. If you know, let us know, or we'll drop it in at the end of this episode when it suddenly occurs to us. So getting back to the movie then, I'm going to ask you a really simple question to begin with. And is the movie better on reflection because of what it led to? And if it had only ever been a standalone movie, would it have been somewhat disappointing? What do you think?
I think watching it back like this, I think it works both ways. So I have a memory, which I only remembered while I was watching the film. This was one of my movies when I wasn't feeling well. So I'd stick it on, and then after that I could be like, oh, I'll watch the next one, and that's The Incredible Hulk. And at that time it was dead easy to do. You could probably do it like that. But watching it now, knowing everything that happens, it just makes it that much more interesting to see, like, kind of where Tony Stark and Iron Man started out, to see that hero's journey and see him be willing to sacrifice himself. And one of my points that I was going to say is that Yinsen is technically responsible for saving the universe. Mm-hmm. Because if it wasn't for his aspiring message and saving Tony Stark, I meant to say inspiring message, then would he have done the same thing? So it is nice to think that is the case, and it's nice to see all the references going through it and things like that, but it also works very well as a standalone film. Like, you could just watch the movies as the Iron Man trilogy and it would still sort of make some sense and be enjoyable. So I think it works, it's another shameless plug, it works with the benefit of hindsight, and it mm-hmm. also works as a thing itself, and I think it's really good like that.
Okay, I'd agree with that. I mean, if you could, I could imagine going back and watching this film. Let's imagine it hadn't been terribly successful, and so therefore they just sort of canned the whole thing. I think you could still go back and enjoy this movie just for what it is. I've just thought of someone.
Oh.
This is a David Tennant.
Oh, yeah.
Star Wars Marvel, because he's in one of their series, isn't he?
Yeah, he's in Jessica Jones.
That's right, and he...
And Ahsoka.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you very much. well done, me. Thanks very much indeed. You challenge over to you now, see if you can get one as this episode progresses. David Tennant. And Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Let's not go down that road. Is there anybody that's appeared in Doctor Who, Marvel, and Star Wars?
It's like that Harry Potter, Doctor Who, Game of Thrones. Could be here forever.
You could be here forever. I did think one big thing. I always sort of get to big things before the small talk of the episode, but I did think one big thing, right? And I don't know whether it's deliberately ironic, a massive plot hole, I don't know, or whether or not it's just I've read too much into it, right? So Tony Stark, is a massive weapons developer. That's mm-hmm. what he does, taken over from his father. And then he decides, having seen the horrors of war, he decides he's going to stop making weapons. Okay?
Yeah.
But Iron Man is just a big weapon. It's got it's got lots of guns and bombs and shoots stuff and blows things up and has massive fights. So is that deliberately ironic? A massive oversight? Or am I just being too grumpy?
I don't know. It feels like I don't like the weapons you use to make war, so I've got a different weapon to stop your war.
Yeah, right?
It does make sense.
Created a weapon, but the weapon is designed to end all war. But then that's what everybody always says when they make a weapon. We'll make a weapon so big, so powerful, we'll be far too afraid to use it, and we will end all wars. Well, not really. I just thought that's like just sort of desperate irony in the fact that, you know, if he really wanted to stop making weapons, find a way to use that thing in his chest to save people's lives when they're injured.
Well, it was always supposed to be a power source, that just sort of renewable energy, that sort of nonsense. But right. it just uses it to charge a weapon, yeah.
So I don't know whether it's deliberately ironic or anything else. And the only other, I'm going to get onto why I actually thought about the film, but the only other Iron Man issue I've always had, in inverted commas, it's not really an issue, is like Batman, Iron Man's not really a superhero. He's just the product of an extraordinarily wealthy person.
Yeah.
And so I always had that problem with Iron Man as well. But back to the movie, I did find it was quite a nice ride.
Yeah, I think for me, weirdly enough, the part that I originally sort of switched off at when I was a kid and thought, oh, this is a bit violent and gory, was the part that I really got into this time. And that's obviously the beginning after the attack and he pulls the thing out of his nose.
Yeah.
But I think overall it was just, I really enjoyed watching it because I think it's got a great story.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't a script, or there was barely a script. I don't know if you know that.
No, yeah, I think I read something like that in the trivia. They spent so much time on design and everything else that there was barely any script by the time they got to shoot it.
And I think that you can tell in some scenes, but I think that just works really well, especially with sort of Robert Downey Jr.'s sort of, the words just come out of my head, improv, sort of, mm-hmm. as he sort of says his own lines and that sort of thing. And it totally works as he's not held back by a script and needing to deliver so much exposition. And I think it's just one of those movies where you can sit down and watch it. You don't need to know a ton of things about the character or the universe at that point. And it's just an enjoyable ride. And I know they've always been compared to, like, theme park rides. But I don't really see it with a lot of them, and especially this one, because it is sort of cinematic and it works.
But I don't have a problem with the theme park ride analogy, because a theme park ride is pure entertainment based on adrenaline, fear, going upside down. And why not make a movie that's purely just adrenaline, fun, screaming in all the right places, and is utterly kind of, you know, just designed to scare you and entertain you. The theme park thing, I always thought was a really bad analogy, because theme parks are, if you like that kind of thing, fun. And if you don't like that kind of thing, then you don't go to a theme park.
That's a really good way to put it, actually. I've never thought of it like that.
And Robert Downey Jr. in this movie is excellent, I think. I think he's great. Absolutely. In this film. It's so good. It's like he has exactly what's required for his interpretation of the Tony Stark character. I mean, he's a good actor anyway. I don't know if you've ever seen him in anything that isn't a kind of Marvel thing. I don't know if you've ever seen that, something like Chaplin, for example, from much from earlier, but he's a really, really good actor. And so I think he works brilliantly in this.
I think sometimes he looks a bit plastic.
Yeah.
Just the way they've done his hair and sculpted his beard.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, looking past that, I think he is a fantastic actor. He'd be really good at playing Doctor Doom, you know.
Yeah.
Actually, do you know what? Do you know what I've just realised?
What?
Natalie Portman.
Oh,
she's in Thor and in Star Wars.
Oh, that's a really obvious one as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
That trumps my David Tennant, because she's actually, she's got quite key roles in either of those universes, hasn't she?
Yeah, she's actually in a movie and is visible as the character. Yeah,
and is quite quite central to some of them. How embarrassing. You know, talking of crossovers, the director of this movie, Jon Favreau, the first time I ever saw him on screen was in Friends.
Oh, wow. I didn't actually know he was in that.
He played an incredibly wealthy tech giant who fell in love with Monica, and he kept proposing to her and she kept saying no. And he was kind of modelled on... I don't know, these rich people, and he ended up becoming a cage fighter. And yeah, and then he kind of stopped doing Friends and went into movie making. And it seems a bit of an odd choice to direct the first big budget Marvel movie, but there you go.
Do you know he's also in Star Wars?
Was he? Where was he?
Yeah.
Where was he in Star Wars?
I don't know, he must make a cameo or something, but he sort of made the Mandalorian show too.
Of course, yeah, he did. He directed Mandalorian. Wow, yeah.
So he's in there somewhere.
We're really good at this, aren't we?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
You can tell we like these things.
Absolutely. Casting-wise, what did you... Go on, go blue, blue, blue.
It doesn't actually say what he is. I think he might just be the director.
I think he might be, yeah. Talking of directors that have also appeared in different incarnations... I'm pretty sure you've got Taika Waititi, or Waititi rather. I'm pretty sure.
He's in Thor as well.
He's in Thor, and I'm pretty sure he had something to do with The Mandalorian as well. Maybe he directed an episode or two.
Oh. Actually, I think he's also a droid in The Mandalorian.
There you go. Brilliant. What did you make of the cast in Iron Man?
I think it's great, and I really appreciate Terrence Howard coming back in all of the sequels, especially with the follow-up line of next time, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you want me to answer that seriously?
Sure.
No, I think it is a really good cast. I mean, I've never really been a big Gwyneth Paltrow fan, but I think she does an okay job in this film anyway. Jeff Bridges, perfect villain, I think.
Yeah, good.
It is a small cast, though.
Yeah,
but that makes sense for a movie like this. You don't need all of these cameos and people coming in all the time.
I was surprised to discover, because I'd forgotten, that Paul Bettany is still the voice of the robot in this movie. Because he obviously goes on to do Vision, but I'd absolutely forgotten that he was just the voice of, I can't remember the robot's name now, Jarvis.
Yeah. I got a bit of trivia about that.
Go on, let's hear your trivia.
Oh, should I jump into it now?
Yeah. I'm interested in the Jarvis trivia. Let's hear that.
Yeah, Paul Bettany, who also, by the way, was in a Star Wars film, he said it was the easiest job ever because he only worked for 2 hours, got paid a lot of money, and went on holiday with his wife, who also voices an AI suit in Spider-Man, by the way. But obviously his role got bigger, but yeah, I think I heard that before where he just sort of phoned it in, because that's all he needed to do was just the voice.
Well, it wouldn't be challenging, would it? But I thought Jeff Bridges was an interesting choice as the kind of big villain as well. I think it's really important to, when they cast the villain, to get that bit right, and I think he absolutely pulled it off really, really well. I actually thought he was great in it. Just get good actors. It'd be really easy to fill these big theme park movies with not very good actors. But actually, they've always made, I think, a really creditable effort to put in people that have some, I don't know what you'd call it, they're serious actors at least, yeah?
Yeah, I think this is interesting as well because he is the first MCU villain. So there was no real thing to play off of. He just had to go in and do it. And I think he does a really good job of that, and he sets the road quite nicely for everyone.
He did learn how to use the machine quite quickly, though. I mean, by comparison to Tony Stark, who obviously had to spend some time on it, he did pull that off, I thought, quite quickly.
Yeah, but it's a comic book movie. How can Spider-Man make a suit? Why isn't Anne cold on top of the Empire State Building in Kong?
That is true. And for the character that plays James Rhodey Rhodes, Terrence Howard, they changed the actor, right?
They did, yeah.
Do we know why they changed the actor?
I could be wrong about this, but off the top of my head, I think it had some sort of disagreement. So he didn't agree with the way the character was going, or maybe it was over money. I don't quite remember, to be honest.
I just thought it was just sort of very, very interesting that they did that. It just felt like a bit of an odd thing that they did. Also nice to see S.H.I.E.L.D. I think, well, I can't remember. Agent Coulson, is that who it is?
That's who it is, because
that's one of the things I'd even forgotten existed. I actually have watched Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and I watched it quite religiously. And then when I saw him in the movie, I thought, oh, I'd forgotten you were in that. And it made me want to go and watch that program again.
Yeah, I've been watching it every week anyway. It's great. I go back to it quite a lot.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen it for donkey's years, but that might be one that I...
It's a great show.
Yeah, it is a really, really good show. I really, really like it. Do you want to know how many Oscars this movie was nominated for?
Go for it.
Well, what do you think?
Four?
No, two. It was nominated for only two Academy Awards, which it didn't win. But that, you know, that's another one where you just think how all these things getting nominated for Academy Awards. It was nominated for Best Sound Editing, Best Visual Effects.
Wow.
Which is, you know, pretty good. But it did win an awful lot of awards. I always think that's quite good because they are, as you say, they sort of, people malign these movies. But they obviously are, in certain things like sound editing and special effects, they're right at the cutting edge of that, aren't they?
Absolutely, yeah. I think, I'd noticed the sound design, which is very rare for me sometimes, even though I like sound. And I thought it was a really good use of sound design, especially because the suit, every time he moves, it makes a sound.
Yeah.
I think that's such an important attention to detail that nobody would really... Because it's normal. It's sound you'd expect to hear. But doing that in the edit must be a pain. So I really appreciated all of it, to be honest.
Yeah, I do like... We said something similar in Transformers, where you don't really have a frame of reference to what it sounds like. So they're very creative on what it does, and it absolutely works. The other thing there was one mildly irritating thing I found about this movie, and that was its shameless product placement. It was all over the movie, literally, like Audi cars. I mean, I came away thinking, oh, I wonder if I should buy an Audi. And then I realised it's because I just watched Iron Man. It's just, you know, it's just all over it.
I really wanted to say it's a really good 2-hour advert for that Audi.
It really is, yeah.
Yeah. I read a bit of trivia, which I wasn't going to include, but apparently there was supposed to be a big action piece with the Audi at the end of the film, but when they tried to flip it, it wouldn't flip because it was so cleverly designed, so they had to cut it out of the film.
Wow, there you go. If you're listening, Audi, well done. Well done, you. Did you know that this is not trivia, this is just goes back to what I was saying before about kind of... the importance of these movies and how often overlooked they are. In 2022, the Library of Congress selected this film for preservation in the National Film Registry, describing it as culturally, historically, and aesthetically significant.
Wow. I know a lot of people still say that this is their favourite MCU film as well.
Yeah, no, it is a decent movie. I don't know if it's my favourite, though.
No, it's not my favourite.
It made a lot of money. We always do the gross. It had a budget of 130 million, which doesn't seem very much by today's standards. But
no.
And it made 585. So I didn't make a huge amount of money, but it was clearly bankable. It ended up third in 2008 behind the following brilliant movies: Indiana Jones. Sorry, 2008. Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Which we have covered, and The Dark Knight, which we won't cover because we didn't see it at the movies.
No, but it is a great film.
I don't think I've ever seen it.
It's the one with Heath Ledger.
Oh yeah, of course I've seen it. Course I've seen it. But I don't really like Batman. Sorry if you're out there and you're a Batman fan. It's not there. It's not really my...
Cut the podcast. Cut the podcast. Yeah,
quick, cut. So good cast, good everything, and probably, or at least as far as I can remember, the first real rock music soundtrack where the music hadn't been written for the movie.
Right.
Because there's some real bangers in this, isn't there? Like, if you like that kind of thing, there's some real rock and roll music in there.
True.
So there's, you know...
I've got an anecdote about the music.
I'd very much like to hear that.
It's not directly about me, and it's not about the, it's about the music made for the film. There's one specific piece of music in this film that haunts me now.
Oh, which is?
So there's a YouTuber who I'm not going to name for obvious reasons.
Sure.
Who uses part of that music as his intro for his YouTube videos.
Mm-hmm.
And he did loads of toy reviews and things like that. So as a kid, I watched quite a lot of it. It turns out this man murdered someone.
Wow.
So it's a bit tainted for me now.
Yeah.
But just that one bit of song. And every so often there's a little bit of it. I'm like, oh dear.
Oh dear. I was reading about this soundtrack because there isn't really a soundtrack sort of in the traditional sense, like, you know, music score. I mean, there is, but it's not really one in the traditional sense. Apparently, the director, Jon Favreau, also from Friends, he had decided that Tony Stark was a rock star and therefore all the music should be rock music and that that's what would suit the film. And at the end of the movie, when they do the Black Sabbath song, which is called Iron Man, that might be the most perfect symbiosis of song not written for movie. We had that question last week, if you remember.
Yeah.
But it just fits so well, doesn't it? It's like they were building up to that one moment.
Have you ever seen the edits of Endgame where when he goes to snap his fingers, it starts to play that song and it happens just in time with it?
No,
they
I
should
haven't
have done
seen
that. It would have been so perfect.
Oh, I haven't seen that. I haven't. Yeah, I shall check that out. I did like the soundtrack. I did think it fit really, really well.
Yeah.
There you go. You must have many out-of-pocket takes on this movie. Trivia things. There must be dozens and
trivia.
Dozens and Mads Mikkelsen.
Ah, yeah.
Sorry, just to jump in there with
I know what you mean.
With we can only think of one actor that appeared in. Across these universes, and they're probably about 1,000. Mads Mikkelsen's another one. There you go. I can't believe we didn't remember Natalie Portman. We love Natalie Portman.
I know.
That's embarrassing.
Yeah. This isn't necessarily trivia, but it is something I wanted to point out for you specifically. You should already know this, I hope. Farhan Tahir, who plays Raza, who's one of the bad guys in this film, he played a bad guy in Chuck.
I know
who
that,
was
yep.
Farrokh
Bulsara.
I'm so glad you pronounced it instead. I would have butchered it. But I just thought it was really interesting. I always think of that when I see him.
And you know who Farrokh Bulsara is, right?
I do. It's Freddie Mercury.
It's Freddie Mercury, yeah. I remember watching that in Chuck thinking, no, that can't be right. I can't believe I've just seen this.
It was you who pointed it out to me as well. I never would have noticed.
Yeah, Farrokh Bulsara. Is it true, by the way? I know that you're probably going to come to this in your trivia, but is it true that the classic line at the end of the movie, "I am Iron Man," was not in the script? He just sort of made it up. Is that a true thing?
Yeah. It's as true as the trivia says it is, I suppose. But yeah, apparently that wasn't in the script. And to bounce off of that, I do have a bit of trivia. To avoid the spoilers of it all, at the final press conference, the extras were told that it was a dream sequence, which I find interesting because that's cool. But in the days of this is the only film, why would you need to keep a spoiler so secret?
Yeah, well, absolutely. Like that. Yeah, you can see why they were so keen on keeping the script tight and whatever. But you absolutely wouldn't want one. Yeah.
Yeah, because like if that sort of spoiler came out today for a movie 10 years later, that would be a spoiler. You wouldn't want people to know that. But back then it was just like, okay, that's part of the film.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
Anyway.
I didn't know that. I also didn't realise until we're talking about it now just how improvised the whole thing was. There's a quote, I think.
Yeah.
There's a quote from Jeff Bridges. He basically says he first of all, when he got on set, he hated it because he likes to be prepared. And he was like, oh, my goodness, I don't know what I'm doing. And then apparently he said something along the lines of that by the end of the shoot, he was absolutely loving it. It was the most fun he'd ever had because there was this zero pressure. You sort of don't have to go home and learn your lines the next. You just come in and you just basically wing it. I don't think you could do that now.
No, I think it's risky. It depends on who you've got, I suppose. To act in those roles, but yeah, I know Gwyneth Paltrow struggled.
Yeah, I can imagine that some certain actors. I don't want to sound sort of disingenuous or whatever. If you've ever done any performance thing with anybody who is improvising and you're on the other end of that, that can be quite difficult if that's not your thing, because you don't know what they're going to say. And some of it's the most natural thing in the world. You kind of get a sense that Robert Downey Jr. is a natural improviser. And if you are anybody else, you're always going to get stuck. You're always going to get a bit caught on that, aren't you?
Yeah, I think with Robert Downey Jr. as well, he kind of just is that character. So for him, it's just sort of, I suppose, playing himself.
Yeah. Do you want to get the client? I'm going to ask you this question. There were quite a number of other actors who were being considered for the role of Iron Man. Do you know who any of them are?
I know one of them's Tom Cruise, and I've read in the trivia Timothy Oliphant, which I think would have been cool.
Yeah, and I think the other one is I think Nick Cage was briefly considered.
Okay,
but I mean, surely Nick Cage is briefly considered for everything.
Yeah, I think I saw Hugh Jackman was as well.
Yeah, Hugh Jackman. Yeah, that wouldn't work though, would it? He is Wolverine.
No.
Do you think sometimes when they do the, you know, like when you have that conversation, you can't be Hugh Jackman, he's Wolverine. And I think a lot of the opposition, and there was a lot of opposition to Robert Downey's new role within the MCU, is because he will always be Iron Man. But do you think, I don't know if that's really fair to actors, do you?
No, I think it's difficult because it depends on the range of the actor. I know that can work, sort of thing. You know, like Andy Serkis?
Yeah.
Who's in Star Wars and Marvel.
Is he?
Yeah.
No.
There's another one.
That leads me to... you know, Andy Serkis, MCU, Lord of the Rings, Star Wars. Anybody else that can claim that holy triumvirate?
There's The Hobbit. Does that count? Richard Armitage.
He's not in Star Wars,
is he? I don't
know
what he is. According to Google, he is.
Is he? Oh, there might be one, though. There might be another one. Hang on, let me just go into my memory banks. Do I have a memory of seeing... I've forgotten his name. What's it? Carl Urban. In any of these movies?
Yes, he's in Thor.
He's in Thor. Third one. Is he in Star Wars anywhere?
I want to say yes, but I'm not entirely sure. Yeah,
I do want to say yes, but I wouldn't swear to it. He was definitely
more of a Trekkie, though.
He's definitely in Star Trek as well, isn't he? So I think he might be. You know, I think he has crossed over. I don't want to say that he has, but I'm going to go with Carl Urban.
Okay.
So that gives us Star Trek, Star Wars, MCU, Lord of the Rings. That's four. Is Carl Urban the most highly decorated one we have so far?
Well, he's technically a stormtrooper in Rise of Skywalker, but he's uncredited.
Right. I don't think it counts.
Does that count?
I don't think it counts. Okay. I think it probably does count, doesn't it? So
it depends if it... Because Tom Hardy was a deleted scene. So maybe it counts more? I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe it does, yeah. We could do this all night. Carl Urban. I wonder if there's anybody that can... I wonder what the greatest one you could claim would be. Like, I can't think of what that would be. But at the moment, Carl Urban is my winner, even though I think his is a little bit shaky. I can't think of anybody else who's sort of done a bit of everything. There you go. More trivia, more out-of-pocket takes.
My only other bit of trivia is that Michael Bay called this his favourite Marvel film, which I suppose makes a lot of sense. You can see that there could be influences on Transformers and Iron Man in all of these films.
There is a certain Michael Bayism about it, isn't there?
Yeah.
Do you know what I like? Do you know what I quite like about this though? And I think that's a really good comparison. I think both of these directors, Michael Bay and Jon Favreau, who were probably going to be maligned by certain elements of the movie-going audience. But actually, I think they do quite a good job, as we said with Transformers, the character stuff and the action stuff. It's not just shouting all the way through. And we spoke at great length about how good the script for Transformers is. And even though there wasn't a script for Iron Man per se, it does tickle along quite nicely, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. It's got a good pace, yeah.
Do you have any kind of specific memories of watching this at the movies? Do you have any kind of going back to 2008 watching it?
Yeah, I think the one that sticks out to me the most is the fact that I didn't really enjoy it to begin with. Like the first half of the movie, it just isn't really for me. But when it gets into it, it's quite good, and I think I enjoyed that. I think I have a lot more memories Iron Man-esque for the second film, which I think would be quite an interesting one to go back to. But as I say, yeah, even this being my sick movie when I wasn't feeling well, it's always had that sort of place within my life, but it was never that huge a thing for me back then. I think Spider-Man was the way forward, because I don't even think I was that interested in Batman at the time either.
But I think you hit upon something there as well, which was Spider-Man had happened at this point. Yeah. 1, 2, 3 Spider-Mans have done. The final Spider-Man film had been sort of disappointing on a number of levels. Yeah. And I think when this was coming out, and I don't remember the trailer or anything like that, but I guess this was just another superhero movie that we're going to go and watch. I don't think there was any anticipation about it. It was just one that we would just naturally have gone to the movies and watched. And I do remember, and this will come out in the later podcast, but I do remember Iron Man 2 being something we were more interested in.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, there you go.
I think even more so than the other Marvel films that were coming out at that time, because I think I've said before, I didn't see Thor in cinema, and I didn't see the first Captain America until later on in the cinema. I think Iron Man was our sort of main focus at that point, apart from Hulk, but that was a mistake.
Oh, yeah, it certainly was. Anyway, that's a different podcast altogether. I'm gonna ask if you've got anything else you want to say about this movie, or should we move on to our scores?
I think I've kind of covered everything. I think I'd be repeating myself if I sort of said any of my other notes, really. So I'm happy to do the score.
I think I chose the movie, right? So I get to go first.
You did?
So I gave it 6. Yeah. I gave it 6, which I think is solid. You know, it's mm-hmm. you know, 5 being average, better than average. I did enjoy it this time around. I did enjoy Robert Downey Jr. I enjoyed it more in sort of relation and understanding of what then happened over the next 15 years or so in the MCU. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, creditable acting performances from all. So I'm going to go up to a 7. Okay. I think it's slightly better than a 6. I don't think it's the best film we've watched in this podcast journey that we're on. But I think it's a solid 7. And I think it gets the extra mark because I thought Robert Downey Jr. was super duper fun. So I'm going to go 7 for Iron Man.
Nice. I think, yeah, similar for me. I think I do, in hindsight, which is my score, I do enjoy this film a lot. It is sort of the good one that paved the way for everything. It could have gone a lot worse. I think it's got a good story, great sound, as I've said, great use of practical effects as mm-hmm. well. I'm bumping it up to an 8 out of 10, which I know some people will think isn't high enough, but I think with what follows, and the world around it, I think I'm happy giving this an 8 out of 10 for me.
I think that's absolutely fair enough, 8 out of 10. I think it's definitely up there with those kinds of things, you know. I think it's you know, it's definitely, if it's your thing, then you're gonna like it. So yeah, okay, so 7 from you, 8 from me, giving it a 7.5 overall, which I think sits quite nicely.
It does.
So the only thing left to do on Iron Man then is our one-word review of Iron Man, which is a thing that we always forget. So what do we think?
It is.
One-word review of Iron Man.
I'm just going to go with the word action.
Good. I like it. That's a good
Actually,
one.
I really like that, yeah.
That's good. I'm going to go with metal.
Nice.
Because of the soundtrack and because of the fact that he's made of metal. Metal bloke.
Oh, yeah.
So we must choose next week's movie, and it was my turn last week, so it's your turn this week.
It is, yeah. So I wasn't too sure what sort of a film to go with going on from here, but I have actually settled on something. And I think because it's coming towards the end of the year, so hopefully you're listening to this towards the end of the year, And this was actually a film recommended by our number one fan, Josie. And we're going to go for the, 2005 classic, The Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe.
Wow. Okay. All right, good. No, that feels good. All right.
It's appropriate, isn't it?
It certainly is. I like that. The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. Thanks, Josie. She'll be looking forward to this. It's taken us a while to get around to it as well. You have to give it your score and memory stuff first. Yeah, that's the new rule, isn't it? You have to give it your memory score, correct?
I do, yeah. So I think my memory score for Narnia, I think this was one of those big ones as a kid. I remember it being on Blue Peter, and they're doing a bit of the behind the scenes and interviews with the kids. And I was about that age where the world of Narnia, the magic of it was real to me. And it was like coming off the back of the Harry Potter films as well. So I really enjoyed this film, and I don't think I've seen it in a very long time. It might have been about 2 years ago. But so I think I enjoyed it back then, and I'm hoping to enjoy it now. So I think based on that, I'm probably going to give it a 7 out of 10. Because it's a good starting point for that franchise, which ultimately flopped. But, you know, we'll see.
This film is it's really interesting you would choose this. And I don't want to, I always talk too long and then ruin what I'm going to say in the next episode. But I will, so I'll be as brief as I possibly can. So the Narnia books are central to my childhood. Okay. I was loaned the Narnia books by a guy who's called Francis Burroughs, who was the choir master of the church where I sang in the choir, and he had loaned me these books, and it would be fair to say that there weren't, and this is, I don't mean this disrespectfully to my mummy and daddy, but there were not many books in my house as a child. So I read all 7 Narnia books from about the age of 8 or 9 all the way through my childhood, teenage years. And I think at some point I know that I'd read The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe over 100 times. And that's not an exaggeration, okay?
Wow.
And so I was very excited by the concept of doing the Narnia movies, because I had made those movies myself in my head 1,000 times.
Yeah.
And I also really enjoyed the cartoon movie of The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, which came out in the 70s, which is still a really good movie. And so this movie was never, ever going to live up to my expectations, ever.
No.
we can talk a little bit about why that would be in the next episode. I enjoyed it. It was great to see that world realized on screen. But I did not think it was a very good movie. So I'm interested to watch it again with the benefit of hindsight, many years after that, with a little bit more experience. But I'm going to have to give it a 3.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Because I don't think it's a bad movie, but my memory of it was it was never going to be good enough. And I think I think I had this kind of desperate arrogance, because I was an adult when it came out, that if somebody had given me $100 million, I would have made a better job of it.
True. And okay.
Of course, I don't think that's true, but there you go. So for me, it's a 3 out of 10. But it'd be interesting to watch it again. I'm genuinely looking forward to watching it again. I do wish they'd carried on.
Me too. Yeah.
I do wish they'd carried on making these movies.
Well, they're doing a Netflix series now, aren't they?
Are they? I did.
Yeah, and I think it's the lady who directed Barbie, I think, is doing it.
Okay, that doesn't fill me with a great deal of confidence, but there you go.
Okay.
Okay, we'll be back next week then with our views on The Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. Very excited to go away and watch this from 2005. Those children in that movie will be really old now.
Yeah, I think so. I hope so.
Well, not really old, but you know what I mean. I think if you're a child actor, you are forever stuck in that moment, right?
Yeah, true.
So, like, you can watch Harry Potter with Daniel Radcliffe in it, and you maybe watch the first one, and that's it. That is Daniel Radcliffe forever.
It is.
When you see him as a grown up, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't compute.
No.
So, and occasionally you see occasionally that happens where sort of somebody played like. In fact, this is a good example that one of the actresses in this movie, I think her name is Georgie Henley or something like that.
Yeah.
She kind of I think she kind of showed up in a television program that I've been watching, The Diplomat, on Netflix.
All right.
And I thought, oh, I know this actress from somewhere. So you do that thing where you Google it, and it turns out she was in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And you just, it's really, yeah, it's really weird. She's like, you know, in her early 30s now. Anyway, there you go. I'm waffling there, but there you go. Child actors. So, did you know that today is not really a day of anything, unless you have anything else for us?
I don't actually today, no.
Isn't that disappointing?
It is, yeah. I did want to just give a shout out to Ray Stevenson, who's unfortunately passed away, but he was in Thor and Ahsoka, so that's another one.
Oh, well, God bless you, Ray, wherever you are.
Great actor.
Yeah.
Gone too soon.
And if there's anybody else out there that has any other movie crossovers, or at least Star Wars... Actually, what we really want to know is which actor can claim to have appeared in the most... franchises, and you think of all of the franchises,
the big franchises. Yeah.
Is there anybody out there? I bet there is, and I bet it's really random. It won't be someone that you think it is. All right. Well, thanks very much for listening. As always, we'll be back next week, and we have enjoyed your company. Thank you very much for listening. We did have a big number of downloads. I have to say, we have reached a bit of a milestone in our download. So thank you to all those people out there that have been listening to us. Whatever you might think, we do appreciate it. And we're off to Narnia. I shall be heading into the wardrobe very soon. Tom Hiddleston?
I don't think he's been in the Star Wars.
No, I don't think he has either.
Yeah. Benedict Cumberbatch.
Oh.
I don't think he's all... Is he in a Star Wars?
He must be.
He's in Star Trek.
Okay, that's one to investigate. Idris Elba?
Oh, yeah, he's in it.
There you go. Bye-bye then.
Bye.
With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see, were the movies truly awful, or did they change history?
Just gonna fill in the radio waves with welcome to Radio Sam, playing the music of Sam. Starring Sam as your host, with special guest star on the trumpet. Take it away. I just did a bit of class audio that's never going to make the podcast.
What did you do?
I'm hosting a radio show now, apparently. You're on the trumpet.
Okay, excellent. Brilliant. Well done us.